Well, we're trying not to.
Good morning. I'm opening this meeting of the House Committee on Revenue, Monday, June 17th. We have two items on the agenda this morning. We will take them in the order in which they are printed. And for those of you who are waiting with great expectation on House Bill 2130 work session, we're still waiting to clear up a couple of issues and also for paperwork. I'm opening an informational meeting on global intangible low-taxed income.
Good morning, Madam Chair, members of the committee. Just to provide a little bit of context before Kate goes through some of the detail, not to take everybody back to the 2018 short session, but at the end of 2017, the feds passed the Tax Cut and Jobs Act. And in 2018, when the legislature was dealing with the Reconnect bill, one of the big issues that was discussed at the time was this repatriation dollars. And it was mainly the focus of the discussion was on the corporate side and whether or not how we were tied to federal law, whether or not that would be a one-time bump in revenue or a one-time loss. And without getting into all of those complications, it looked like we were actually going to be at a loss for revenue. It would have been a loss. This one-time money coming back into the U.S. would have been a loss for the state because of how we were tied. So the legislature fixed that, and there was this one-time bump in revenue that we're still tracking with the revenue forecast. At the time, it wasn't entirely clear, because the law was only 2 months old at the time, it wasn't clear how it would be handled on the personal income tax side, as well as these GILTI payments, the global intangible low taxed income. The federal landscape for taxation at the corporate level went from a worldwide system to a territorial system. It was a full reverse of that. And we knew at the time, in dealing with the repatriation, that that was the most pressing issue. And so the legislature dealt with that in 2018. And we knew we'd be coming back to deal with more complicated factors related to the corporate income tax and possibly the personal income tax. So the Senate side has been grappling with this all session. And I think scheduled today or tomorrow, Senate Bill 851 is on the Senate floor. So in anticipation of it coming over to House revenue, and so that there's at least some time for the committee members here to digest some of that information, Kate is going to go through a presentation about that topic, so it's not completely unfamiliar. It is a fairly dense topic. It's not, well, everything with corporate income tax seems to be complicated. But that's the backdrop here. So Kate just wanted to give a kind of an orientation to the topic, so a primer on the bill that to come.
Thank you.
Chair Nathanson, members of the committee, I'm Caitlin Harger with the Legislative Revenue Office. As Chris mentioned, I'm going to give a high-level overview of GILTI today. When Senate Bill 851 does come, it deals with a couple other provisions, but today I'll just be focusing on GILTI. So first, what is GILTI? So as the title slide said, this is Global Intangible Low-Taxed Income, but the name is a little bit misleading because it doesn't have to be low-tax and doesn't necessarily have to be intangible. So just keep that in mind as you learn about this topic. So what is GILTI? This is a reoccurring tax on high-return income earned by controlled foreign corporations. So the repatriation that Chris mentioned a few seconds ago was a one-time transition tax. This is an ongoing reoccurring tax, and it deals with these controlled foreign corporations. At the federal level, this income, so GILTI is a type of income that the federal government newly defined as part of the Tax Cuts and Jobs Act. So at the federal level, that income is eligible for a 50% federal deduction. And additionally, that income has federal tax credits for foreign taxes paid, 80% of foreign tax amounts paid. But this tax credit does not apply at the state level. So that's one difference between federal and the state treatment of GILTI in the absence of any legislation. In general, this is treated similar to Subpart F income, but at the federal level, it is not Subpart F income. This is kind of confusing, but you can think of it conceptually as similar to Subpart F income. There's similar regimes to try to deal with income shifting or production shifting to other countries that have low tax regimes. Additionally, GILTI is a global measurement of income, so it's global is the first word here, whereas I think previously with the listed jurisdictions, there was a list that Oregon was taxing guilty as broader in that sense, that now more countries would be captured under this type of taxation. And again, this is a federal provision. So what are the problems that we think might be going on with guilty? So first, there's uncertainty regarding how Oregon will treat guilty for tax purposes. I think Senate Bill 851 is dealing with this uncertainty, but earlier in the session, there was a lot of uncertainty about whether this would be treated as income or as a dividend, how much of it would be taxed by the state, different things like that. And so for taxpayers, there's a lack of certainty. In the hearings that we heard on the Senate in the Senate committee, there was concern about if we just left this up to the Department of Revenue to provide guidance, it would create further uncertainty or not fully clarify the issue, and that taxpayers would like kind of clarity in statute regarding this topic. So there's potential for litigation in the absence of legislation. Then the bigger problem that Chris alluded to is there's a potential for a double deduction in the absence of legislation. And I'll go through how that would work. In short, I said above, there's a 50% federal deduction. So we take our gross amount, 50% is deducted at the federal level. So the other 50% passes through to Oregon. Then Oregon, some taxpayers could take an 80% dividends received deduction on top of that 50%, which would lead to a double deduction. And so part of what the Senate committee has been working on this session is understanding how we can avoid that double deduction within the state. So those are the problems. The solution to those problems that are presented in Senate Bill 851, first, we would require taxpayers to add back guilty amounts deducted at the federal level. So basically that 50% federal deduction, we're not counting for Oregon purposes. Taxpayers are required to add that back. And then from there, we would give taxpayers an 80% dividends received deduction. And this is consistent with other treatment within the state of similar income. So we believe that this would avoid the double deduction, and so part of the Senate committee's goal was to avoid controversy or litigation. And so based on the work that we've done there in consultation with the Department of Revenue and industry, we believe this is the least controversial path for treating this income in terms of what other states are doing and the available options. So briefly, I'm going to show you an example of this calculation that I discussed on the previous page. So the first line here that says federal gross guilty amount, and I've listed the IRC reference. This is the amount that the taxpayer would initially have as their guilty, so their guilty income. So this example is $2,200. As I mentioned on the previous slide, taxpayers get a 50% federal deduction here. So they can subtract away half of that initial amount, so subtracting away $1,100. So what we're calling the net guilty amount at the federal level is the difference between those two. So it's $1,100, which is effectively 50% of the gross amount. Because of the way that we are connected to federal taxable income, that net amount flows through to the state and as part of our federal taxable income. So this is where we have the potential for a double deduction, because in the absence of legislation, I've already received, or a taxpayer has already received, a 50% deduction at the federal level, and without clear guidance, taxpayers could potentially take an 80% deduction at the state level. So that would be effectively 130% deduction. So to try to avoid that from that occurrence, we, in Senate Bill 851, the suggestion is to add back the federal deduction. So that's the next to last row here. It's adding back the amounts that were subtracted earlier. So now we get back up to this gross amount of guilty, the $2,200. And then Oregon, within the state, would provide this 80% dividends received deduction. And again, that's consistent with other treatment of similar income within the state. And so the taxable guilty after this 80% is $220. So conceptually, just trying to give you an example of how this is calculated. And that's everything I prepared for today. Senate Bill 851 does include other provisions that I can discuss once the bill is in committee, but just to get you a little bit familiar with the topic, that's what I've had for today.
Representative Smith Warner.
Thank you, Madam Chair. Thank you so much for that. Would you go back one slide?
Just so I'm just checking my math. So the federal gross amount of guilty is 2,200. There's a federal deduction. So at the federal level, is the theory that the taxpayer would be paying tax on 1,100 of the 2,200, just to walk me through it.
Yes.
Okay.
And just one other layer. Yep. So on this slide, I haven't included the tax credit for foreign taxes paid, mm-hmm. but potentially, so if I, let's say that I'm a company and I've paid $700 in foreign taxes, that would affect the amount of guilty that's included as well.
Okay. So then when we add back that 1,100 at the state level, then are we back to 2,200?
Yes.
Okay. So then we're back to 2,200. And then if we get credited, if there's then the 80% credit, why don't we have 440 left instead of 220?
This, I might have a mistake here. Let me check my math.
You're right. Yeah, it should be 220. Or 440, rather.
Did 10%, not 20%.
Oh, good.
My apologies.
Good. No, that's okay. Yeah, I thought, yeah. Okay.
We missed the line that said
right.
2,200.
Which makes me a little bit, feel a little bit better.
440.
And then the 440, is that what is, and then taxes are paid on that?
Yes, that's what is included in federal, or in our tax base. Think of it that way. So it's not the amount of tax due on that income,
right.
Rep. Smith Warner. It's the amount that's included in the tax base.
So it's getting pretty, so if even then you're down to 440 and then you're just paying taxes on 440 as opposed to the original 2,200.
Mm-hmm.
That's great. That is interesting. Okay, thank you. Mostly I wanted to check on the math thing. Thank you. That's okay.
Representative Rushkin.
Thank you, Madam Chair. And Caitlin, you mentioned that guilty is reoccurring tax on high return income earned by foreign corporations. And how many of those corporations are in Oregon? Do you have a number? Are we talking 550, 500?
I don't know the answer to that off the top of my head,
okay.
Rep. Rushkin, but I can look into
yeah,
it.
Yeah, that'd be interesting.
Mm-hmm.
I'd like to know that. Thanks.
Good question.
Any other questions?
Thank you for the presentation.
Good job.
To the next.
Yeah.
I'm closing the informational meeting on global intangible low taxed income, opening a work session on House Bill 2130.
I couldn't figure out how that 220 number was there. I can't get there. That's not 80%. So thank you. I would have made it.
Exactly.
If you'd have put the line in there, the summary line, then it would have been easier.
We'll be at ease for about 1 minute. Thank you for your patience. We are ready now for the work session on House Bill 2130. I would like Legislative Revenue Office to explain. This is something that we started hearing about many weeks ago. There are many different parts to this bill. Some of those individual items will be addressed in another bill. Some of them we're just not going to bother with. And several of them, though, do need to be handled by our committee. So please tell us what's in and what's out.
Thank you, Chair, members of the committee. So you may remember that in the House Bill 2130, I made up this table that talked about the section in the bill so that you could find it in the bill, also the statutes that it covered, what it did. And then that original table I had a lot more columns over. So we still have that explaining the actual details and the year that things sunset and when the bill was in or the law statute was enacted and those sorts of things. So this I created or added to just a little bit. If Austin scrolls up just a tiny bit, I don't know. Yeah, there. You can see the original bill had the Section 1, Section 2, Section 3. And so now we have the Dash 6. So for the Dash 6, the portion that removes or extends the sunset for golf courses that are used in water treatment, that is removed altogether. It's not an exemption that's has been used for a while, and that's been removed from the bill. There's several things that are being dealt with in 2164, House Bill 2900.
And let's just put on the record 2164 where it is.
It's in the JTAX or
Joint Committee on
Tax Expenditures. So I'm still working on those issues and helping Kyle because he's working on that bill. And so, but food processing, machinery and equipment that is used in food processing that has an initial 5-year exemption when it's brand new to the food processor, that has another bill, 2900, and then that language, which was being looked at, is also now being looked at in 2164. So it won't be dealt with in this bill. The land that is held for low-income housing, and this has been used by Habitat for Humanity. It's not constructed buildings, but they're holding it during the sort of permitting and processing and that sort of phase, that is still dealt with in this bill, that property tax exemption. And then the actual low-income rental housing is being also dealt with in 2164, the extension of that sunset, and that's all the green stuff there. All those sections were related to low-income rental housing. This bill continues to deal with the property tax exemption sunset for cargo containers. Historic property is in 2164 as well. And this bill, since the original bill with the Dash 6, adds two components. The surviving spouse of fallen safety officer, there's a property tax exemption that's a local option up to $250,000. That is added to this bill as a sunset extension. And also, the 130% cap on central assessed and tangible values for sort of data and communication companies. That is not related to the gigabit issue, which was dealt with in another bill. This is just measuring the amount of intangible assets that communications or centrally assessed company can be taxed on. And so it sets a cap. And that there's an extension of that. And so then if we go to the revenue impact statement, and the bill itself. So I gave another little table, which also deals with the actual dollar number. So we have the four property tax exemptions that are being considered here in this bill with the Dash 6 as it is. So this is providing the sunset for property tax exemption on land held for nonprofit housing. That extends that property tax exemption till 2029. The property tax exemption for cargo containers gets extended to 2026. The property tax exemption for surviving spouse of fallen public safety officers to 2025 and extends the 130% cap on centrally assessed companies to 2025. These are all property tax years, so when I give the date, then that is usually July 1st. Essentially, the application has to be filed for that property tax year. And in the revenue impact statement, you can see that these property tax exemptions currently exist, so the extension doesn't really do anything to the revenue impact until the current statute would have sunset. And so the one with the issue with the biggest dollar number, providing the cap on centrally assessed companies, that essentially means that if a company had intangible values and they were very high, and then you took 130% of the book value of that company, and you compare that and you cap the amount of intangible value at 130%, then you're going to essentially be giving that company a limit on the amount that they owe. And so for a revenue impact, there is a negative revenue impact, but in the 21-22 to 23 biennium, that's only affected for 1 year. And so the current property tax exemption would sunset in the middle of that biennium. And so the impact kicks in the middle of that biennium and then follows through to the next one. And so it's a little more than double. And then the other three property tax exemptions have been relatively small and have had a relatively small property tax impact in between, like, less than $100,000 and $200,000 per biennium. And I'm happy to answer questions.
Questions? Yes, Representative Finley.
There were some issues, last-minute issues that arose. Are they resolved as far as conflicting sunset dates?
And I think Chris might have. I have some information. Chris, I think, might have gathered some in the meantime.
The committee, Chris Allen, I, Legislative Revenue Office. So the issue that we run into is this implicit sunset date issue. And the bill, the way it's drafted, the dash six, takes tax expenditures and just extends the sunset out 6 years. So the policy in questions were related to FCC licenses. And right now, the way the DOR interpreted statute is that that's not affected by the implicit sunset date because it was a modification of an existing tax expenditure. So under that interpretation of law, doesn't currently have that 3 year sunset date. And so in that interpretation, it wouldn't be affected by the extension of the sunset provision, but we are in this kind of gray area with these implicit sunset dates. And as to whether or not this was a tax expenditure that was created after 2014. When the Department of Revenue put together the tax expenditure report, because of the interpretation that it was a modification of an existing tax expenditure, it's not subject to that 6 year sunset, the implicit sunset. And that's how we got to where we are right now. The questions that have popped up recently this morning are, I think, can be boiled down to that interpretation of whether or not that is effective, whether or not that was a new tax expenditure created since 2014. If the answer to that is yes, then it would be affected by this sunset provision and it would be putting a sunset date. So far, we've been operating under the assumption that it was not a new tax expenditure and therefore didn't have this automatic sunset date. But there is a gray area. We've been talking to LC this morning, and I spoke to the Department of Revenue briefly this morning about this issue. So that's kind of where we are. I can elaborate, but it might be better to stop talking.
Thank you. Madam Chair, thank you. I'm not sure this is ready for prime time as of yet. We without resolution, so it's your call. So thank you.
Because this is a House bill, and still it would need to make its way over to the Senate, it would be my preference to have the work session move this along while discussions could still continue today, tomorrow, the next day. And if it's determined that there needs to be an amendment to make it very, very clear to remove the issue of potential gray area, it could be amended in the Senate. There are parts of this bill that I wouldn't want to drop just because we ran out of time. Representative.
Madam Chair, thank you. Am I mistaken? Won't this go to JTAX? It doesn't need to go to the Senate. It would go to the JTAX committee?
Current.
So, I mean.
But it still has to get all the way through both chambers then.
think currently, and somebody can correct me, I don't think it has a subsequent to JTAX right now.
It's going straight to the floor.
Yeah.
Okay. So, but if we send it to JTAX, it wouldn't, it could get there quicker, and it wouldn't have to go through the Senate Revenue Committee.
Another option for the path of the bill.
Madam Chair, that did your call. I mean, I hate to have to rely on somebody else to fix our work. So, but thank you.
Representative Smith Warner.
Thank you, Madam Chair. In a completely different part of the bill, could you remind me the cargo, the credit for the cargo container? Who exactly claims that, and is it for all cargo containers or ones used for a particular thing?
Representative Smith Warner. Chair Nathanson, members of the committee. So in my understanding of how it's used and what happens, it has to be for cargo containers that are used in shipping. And it's a relatively small amount, but the literature that I've read behind it is that Oregon has a port and we compete with Asia, and so lots of other places don't have property taxes on cargo containers, and this provides an exemption. So this does not include cargo containers that are used to make housing or these subsequent uses, but that's the information that I have around it. If you'd like me to look more into it, I could.
International containers.
Mm-hmm.
Helps Port of Portland.
Okay.
We should cancel it.
Many of us have another obligation that started at 9 o'clock. What I'd like to do is stand at ease for just about one minute or less while I confer with Mr. Allen. I hope I can get the words right. Committee, what we're going to do is continue this discussion in a meeting later today after we have time to confer additional for some additional conversations with Legislative Council, Department of Revenue. This committee will convene again later today to complete work on this bill or decide whether it's moving to Joint Committee on Tax Expenditures and in what form, or if there's time to prepare another amendment before we take action. So I don't think I have to bring the gavel down to close the work session, and I'm just going to say the committee will be in recess. Is that correct? So it's about 9:05 this morning. The committee is now in recess. You will hear from us about when we will meet again today. Thank you. Good afternoon. I am reconvening the meeting of the House Committee on Revenue. We will pick up where we left off from our 8:30 meeting. We were in a work session on House Bill 2130. Since I recessed, I don't believe I need to open the work session again, because I believe we are still in the work session.
Thanks for doing that.
Legislative Revenue Office, when we left off, you had explained this is had been a multi-part bill. Some parts are incorporated into another bill in another committee. Some parts we're just not addressing. Would you please review for us what is left now?
Chair Nathanson, members of the committee, House Bill 2130 with the dash 7 has four remaining components that are property tax exemption, sunset extensions, and that includes the 130% cap on intangible assets for centrally assessed companies, land held for low-income housing for development, cargo containers, and the homestead for the spouses of fallen officers. When we left off, we had looked at the revenue impact statement. There were some minimal impacts for the land held for low-income housing, cargo containers, and homestead for the spouses of fallen officers. And then the larger component, the 130% cap which essentially restricts the amount of intangible assets that a company can be taxed on by setting this 130% cap. There was a question about the language of what that would include if the dash six would incorporate other components like FCC licensing that didn't currently have a sunset and then essentially bring them into sunset. And so Elsie has been kind enough to draft a dash seven, which is very explicit and specifies that we're just dealing with the 130% cap and nothing else on the sunset extension, and therefore those are the four components.
Thank you.
Madam Chair, do you need the dash seven amendments moved?
Dash seven would be appreciated. Thank you.
Madam Chair, I move the dash seven amendments to House Bill 2130. Oh, did I take your job away? I'm sorry. It says Finley right on here, but I saw the script under Marcia's.
Yeah, thank
I'm
you.
Sorry.
Oh, you're doing fine.
Sorry, I didn't mean to do
Representative
that.
Smith moves the dash seven amendment adopted into House Bill 2130, and thank you, Representative Smith.
Sorry.
Discussion. Representatives Findlay and anyone else who had been asking about potential impacts, are you satisfied?
I'm very satisfied. Thank you, Madam Chair. I appreciate the extra step, and I think it's important that we do things right here before we move it on asking someone else to fix our work. So thank you.
Thank you for your comment and for reviewing. Any other discussion? Any objections? Motion passes.
All right. Madam Chair, I move House Bill 2130 as amended to the floor with a do pass recommendation and the bill to be referred to the Joint Committee on Tax Expenditures.
Vice Chair Finley moves House Bill 2130 as amended to the floor with a do pass recommendation and that the bill be referred to the Joint Committee on Tax Expenditures. Discussion? Objections? Thank you. Motion passes. That concludes our work on House Bill 2130. I am closing the work session on House Bill 2130, and we are adjourned.
Thank you.